Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 304. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 gray co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
Hey, it's good, man. Just another day, another good day of baseball. Another good day to talk it. We got a lot of promotions this past week, and I think more might be coming. So obviously that makes the fantasy baseball landscape a little more fun when we get these prospects that are simmering in AAA and ready to go. Once they get called up, it's a lot more fun, but I think that we've seen quite a few. We're going to talk about them, but I think that it wouldn't shock me if Caminero's next. So I'll be looking at him and seeing what they decide to do with him. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, this has already been a banner year for promotions. I'm looking at my prospect rankings right now. Obviously, Langford and Churia were up opening day. Holiday's gotten the call and sent back down. Caminero's probably close. Wood, probably next month or two. We'll get, hopefully, Skeens pretty soon. Mayo pretty soon. Let's see who else we got here. Manzardo looks like he's going to be called up with Stephen Kwan going on the IL, but that's still not set in stone as we're recording this. It's about 4 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday right now. We got Loprofito. We've had Andy Páez back. It's been really good prospects and plenty more to come. Kierstad, so many more along the way as well. So it'll be really fun next few months. I love this, the new incentives that really drive this. And it's been a really fun start to the season so far. And like Chris said, we get a lot of fun players to talk about today. Another game of hot cold, the same with hitting prospects. We got a few more promotions to talk about over the last several days. Some pitchers coming back, the San Diego Miami trade from the other day. A lot of fun things. But before we get into all of that, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. And the show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and ToolShedFantasy.com for more work from each of us. And, of course, check out all the other great work going on over at RotoBaller. Use the code TOOLSHED to get you 10% off at checkout for any premium package over at RotoBaller.com. All right, let's start with a couple of this hot players here, players coming back. We'll start with Ranger Suarez, who I wrote this the other day. If the season ended today, he'd have a case for National League Cy Young up there with Imanaga and Jared Jones, obviously. But in seven starts for Suarez so far, 172 ERA, 0.72 whip, also has a 3.5% walk rate, which is down nearly 6% from last year, and a 26.9% strikeout rate, which is a career high mark for him. Previous best was 25.6%. A lot of good in the profile, Chris. You look at the Savant page, a lot of red there. limiting hard contact very well. Very low EV allowed. Hard hit rate only 27.4%. Not walking guys. Ground ball rate's up near 60% after being at 49% last year. But he was usually over 50% in previous years, going with that sinker that he goes with a lot. Not a guy that wows you. Velocity's in the low 90s, and that's where he is this year. 92.2 on the four seam, 90.9 on the sinker, which is actually down from last year. About, you know, 1.5 or so miles an hour on both, which is interesting. But hey, it's working so far. And obviously, he's not going to be a stud like this moving forward. But do you think there's any reason to doubt him being maybe a top 25 arm moving forward, Chris?
He's looked the part. He's very unique in the sense that he can get away with a 91 mile an hour sinker and a 92 mile an hour four seam, because most pitchers can't. I think that really what it comes down to is he's just sequencing his pitches extremely well. He's getting whiffs with the secondaries, the curve and the change, both getting whiffs. He's throwing and mixing the fastballs pretty well, in my opinion. You know, obviously not missing bats with either the cutter or the sinker, but he is actually getting a few whiffs with the four seam when he does throw it. Really low batting average against has a lot to do with the weak contact that he's allowing and the fact that he's keeping the ball on the ground at a 60% clip. That's probably the biggest thing of note. It's up 11 percentage points from last year. So that's a big sticking point too, is that he is now getting the ball on the ground. He already had a high ground ball rate, but now it's 60%. That is quite high. So obviously that's going to play. You know, he's getting a little more horizontal movement with his cutter and even his curveball. So that's been interesting to see. You look at the vertical movement on his pitches too. More depth to the curveball, more depth to the changeup. I don't know. Obviously, he's not going to pitch to this level rest of season, like a 1.72 ERA, 0.72 whip. That's just not going to happen. But I will say that I think Ranger Suarez is here to stay. He's been really good. And I think just the weak contact is huge. Keeping the ball on the ground is huge. And actually, he is striking out more batters than he has at any point in his career. 27% K rate right now. Last year was 22%. Year before was 19.5. So you love to see that 27% K rate with a 3.5% walk rate. He's just able to pitch deep into games because he's not throwing a lot of pitches. He's efficient. I think Suarez is legit. And even if he regresses and he gives you a mid 3 ERA rest of the year, I think you'd be pretty happy considering he was a pickup for some and he was a very late draft pick for others. So I think you have to be very happy with what's happened with Ranger Suarez so far.
I'm looking at the pitch mix again here. The only pitch that's not looking good right now is the cutter. But besides that, every other pitch, all of the other four that he uses, all of the batting average against of 220 or less. The four-seamer has not allowed an extra base hit yet. Neither has the changeup. You mentioned the curve and change getting the whiff rate, both about 36% for those. And yeah, even though the sinker's velo's down, he's getting more sink on it, more vertical drops. It's been working for him there. And I think weak contact on the ground is always a good thing. He's not giving the ball to fly balls or hard hit balls. That's a recipe for success. And he's only 28 years old, too. I thought he was like 31 at this point, but yeah, I think he could definitely be at least like Jose Barrios level or higher moving forward. So I wouldn't, if you want to sell high, I don't know if you can. I don't think the perceived value has risen to the point where he's a great sell high, but I'd probably just hold right now. And you got a pretty good pitcher unless you can get like an ace level return, which you probably can't. But yeah, there's a lot of good in the profile right now for sure. Moving over to a couple other pitchers down in Tampa Bay that are nearing returns, both on rehab assignments right now. We got Taj Bradley and Shane Boz. Bradley looked pretty damn good in both of his rehab outings so far. Now, Boz is a little bit rougher. He's a little bit further behind Bradley at this point. But would you be looking to invest in either of these two, Chris? You know, obviously, the talent for both is pretty substantial, the upside for both. And we've seen that in spurts from both of them, whether it be in the minors or the majors. But we've also seen the downside of both, the injury risk that comes along with both of them, especially Shane Boz. How much would you want to invest right now? Like, how heavily would you want to go after these two guys in dynasty leagues?
I think that you hope that the cost has tanked enough where it doesn't cost you a ton to look to acquire either of them. Obviously, Boz had really high expectations. He's been set back a couple of times, so that's hurt him a bit. I look at Taj Bradley and I think that he's been really sharp on rehab so far. You know, he's looked the part. He's throwing strikes. He's missing bats, keeping runs off the board. So that seems pretty notable. So if you can get a cheaper Taj Bradley, then I'd probably look to do so, just given the fact that I think the cost is probably going to be a little cheaper than what it would be with Shane Baz. Baz has made one rehab start, though, three innings in AAA Durham. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that we see Bradley first. I think he's the one I'd rather get. I just need to see a little more Baz. He hasn't pitched in so long that, you know, I'm not quite as confident in him. But, yeah, I think you take a shot on either depending on the cost. I think Bradley is the shot that I'm looking to take, though.
I think I would go after both of them right now. I think the price tag on both is pretty low at this point. You know, obviously, Baz, we haven't seen a lot of him in the last couple of years. Bradley, we saw him pitch over 100 innings last season. And while the ERA was 5.59, wasn't great, you know, he had a K-minus BB rate of near 20%, 28% K rate overall. His splitter had the 41% whiff rate on it there. Now, I think these are still two very good pitchers long-term. And I think given the price tag on both right now, yeah, Baz is riskier, but I say he probably has higher upside than Bradley too, though Bradley has plenty of upside in his own right. But in general, I think both are great targets right now. Before they get back, Bradley's back soon, so I try to go after him first, then maybe Baz after that. But both good targets given the drop in price tag and perceived value over the last year or so for Baz, and over the last few months for Bradley as he's worked his way back from injury and had that lackluster ERA last year. Over to the hitting side now with Christopher Morel, who I think is also a really solid dynasty buy right now. He's got 7 home runs and 3 steals, which is pretty solid, but you look at the 213 average, 292 OBP. So overall, the slash line leaves a little bit to be desired. But when you look under the hood, yeah, the quality of contact has gone down a little bit. Still has good above average quality of contact metrics. But the improvements I'm looking at here, near 10% drop in K rate from 31%, 21.9%, a little bit, almost a 2% uptick in walk rate, and also 5% increase or 5.5% increase in zone contact, 8% increase in overall contact. These are pretty notable changes here in areas that he really lacked in last year. Like, these were the red flag areas, and yeah, he's still 77.4% zone contact is still below average by, I think, about 4 or 5% from major league average, but much better than 72%. Same with his contact rate, 71% now, was 63. These are all still, you know, not great metrics, but definitely a pretty big step in the right direction. And then when you factor in his, you know, potential for 30 plus home runs, 10 to 15 steals or so, and the fact that he's still starting regularly for the Cubs, that shows they still have a lot of confidence in him. I think it's going to be a matter of time before he really takes off, get the average back up there, at least like 240, 250 or so, with all that power, a little bit of speed. So I think now is a great time to buy before that price tag really takes off for the next weeks or months or so.
Yeah, I think that Morel's always going to be a streaky little hitter where he's going to go through spurts where he's really hot. And we're certainly riding a hot streak right now. He's been extremely good to start the month of May with 3 home runs and then even one on April 29th as well. So dating back the last week or so, he's been hitting the ball extremely well. As you mentioned, I think that Morel's always going to struggle a little bit with strikeouts, but it's down this year. That's encouraging in my opinion. Barrel rate is also down, but still 11%. Pretty solid there. I think that there's a couple things that we'll see improve, and it's a lot of his just hitting against fastballs. He's had some bad luck. He mashed fastballs last year and is actually whiffing way less against them this year. His whiff rate on fastballs is down 10 percentage points this year, but the results are just not there at all. So I do think we see that come around. It's an XBA of 293 versus a 231 actual batting average against fastballs. I don't love the X stats, but I think that's worth noting here that he's hitting fastballs. He's making a ton of contact, but the results aren't coming. The zone contact rate's up 5.5 percentage points. The overall contact rate is up 8 percentage points. Yeah, I think that Morel has made some strides and some changes, and it does make me want to invest. I think that he's going to be really solid, and we'll look back a month from now and say, man, he was really good for that stretch.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think he's a guy that will never get to the elite levels just because of how inconsistent he is and still the lower contact rates. But I think this is a guy that could be, it's an annual top 100 guy, maybe in that 70 to 90 range or so. For a month, he'll look like a top 25 guy, but the next month he might look like a post 250 guy. That's how he is. But yeah, definitely encouraged by some of those metric increases that I mentioned this season for sure. Let's move over to that trade that happened on, was that Thursday or Friday? I can't remember at this point, but the Miami-San Diego trade, San Diego acquiring Luis Arraez from Miami in exchange for Woosung Go and three prospects, Dylan Head, Nathan Martorella, and Jacob Marcy, all four of them heading to Miami in this deal. It makes an interesting roster shakeup there in San Diego and opens up some spots there in Miami. What was your initial thoughts here? Let's start with San Diego side and Luis Arraez. What were your initial thoughts on this trade, Chris? And obviously Arraez is a very polarizing player given his skill set, but how do you think he fits in there in San Diego? And what were your thoughts in general?
It's a very interesting trade for sure. It's really early to sell. And then you saw like GM comes out, Bendix comes out and says, obviously they're not going to be a playoff team and they get obliterated by Oakland, like just absolutely mashed. It was weird. Luis Arraez then goes 4-for-4 in his San Diego debut. Yeah, I think that Luis Arraez is just, he's never been somebody that you want really in fantasy unless you're in like a points league where he really plays up. But, and so far this year, zero home runs, zero stolen bases, but he is slashing 315, 359, 392. The power might come around. He's moving to a park that's not a great hitter's park in all actuality. That's whatever there. I'm not sure overall if it's a big upgrade or not. I do want to look and confirm the park factors for this year. It's actually a pretty sizable downgrade from looking at a park factor standpoint. Not that he was going to hit many home runs anyway, but yeah, Petco Park is a pretty good downgrade, actually an overall park factor. So again, this is a high contact hitter. He's going to put the ball in play a lot. He's not going to strike out. And for points leagues, sure, he's a fine play when you don't get, or when you get negatives for strikeouts and you had this guy in the lineup. His value is interesting. I think the trade was just weird in general. The reactions to the trade were the most interesting thing, I think, because
always
everybody's
are.
Yeah, everybody's reactions were just so different to it. I'm indifferent, honestly. The prospects that came over are like, all right. I've never been a Jacob Marcy guy. Like, he just is not a prospect that I love. He's been not good this year so far, but even last year, he had some of the worst EVs in baseball. So everybody was saying that Jacob Marcy was the highlight of the deal. I don't see that. I think that you hope that Dylan Head turns out to be the headliner here, who has elite speed, first round pick last year. And I like Nathan Martorella still. I know people have like completely jumped ship there. He's somebody to me, like the contact skills are still there. He's still got some pop. So I think that you hope that Head and Martorella work out, and you hope that Marcy can come up and be like a fourth outfield type, but Marcy may get a shot sooner than later. We'll see. They both got assigned to Double A, but yeah, it's an interesting deal overall.
Yeah, so with Arraez, I think it's a slight upgrade, not a huge one, it's an upgrade overall. I don't think the park for him is a matter too much. Like you said, Chris, he's had a lot of home runs anyway, so any park change for him will be like maybe a one or two homer difference either way over a full season. But just like him being in a much better lineup now, having look at the lineup behind him, he led off both games so far, one at DH, one at second base. And then right behind him, you got Tatis, you got Cronenworth, who's having a pretty solid year. Manny Machado, Profar, Bogey, 1 through 9. And the 7, 8, 9 for them right now is Jackson Merrill, Campuzano, and Ha-Seon Kim. Yeah, Ha-Seon Kim hitting like 8th and 9th lately, so that's a pretty good lineup, 1 through 9. Yeah, Tatis struggling. Machado's having a lackluster year, but still a really good lineup overall. They just got to figure out the pitching that's been wildly inconsistent overall. But I think that was a slight upgrade for him. Yeah, and the process going back to Miami, I thought that was a decent return. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. Marcy obviously has a ton of speed, but you mentioned that the power that isn't quite there, at least not to match like the home run total he had last year. Dylan Head has the most upside there. I think you see how the bat comes along, how the body comes along. If he adds more bulk and power to his frame, I think he could be pretty fun one for fantasy purposes. And I still like Marrero a decent amount too. I think he's a buy low. I have all three of these guys within 30, 40 spots overall, and they slot into the 3, 4, 5 spots in that Miami system for me behind both the Meyer pitchers there. So it's still a pretty bad system overall, even after. Probably still like a bottom, I don't know, bottom five, but easily bottom 10. I'd have to look to see if it was bottom five, but definitely in that discussion. But yeah, pretty interesting deal. I want to see how they work around maybe Bogey gets some more time at DH. I mean, Bogey started at DH today with a rise at second base, so they go back and forth with that and rotate some guys through there to keep everybody healthy and fresh. That's probably what happens there. But yeah, very interesting deal there. But Head's pretty fun. Like I said, he's the one that has a lot of breakout appeal here. We know what Marcy is. Marrero is fine. Not like a lot of breakout appeal there. But Head's the real exciting one for sure in that deal. And then in Miami, too, this opens up a spot for, see, Vidal Brujan has been starting pretty regularly for them. This pretty much cements his spot in the lineup, I think. Is there any value left in Vidal Brujan, Chris? He was a real hot prospect about, what, 3-4 years ago? Like, point where he was being ranked top 25, and I'm included in that. I'm 100%. I had him, I think, as high as 13 or 14. He's hitting 294 right now, 368 OBP, 451 slugs. It's a solid slash line. Zero home runs, two steals. Hasn't hit a home run since 2022. You know, granted, he's only had 140 play appearances since then. But I don't know. The speed's obviously pretty solid, even though his sprint speed this year has not been that great overall. But quality of contact just isn't there. He's got a good approach, but I don't know. Like, I still don't think there's a ton of value outside of super deep leagues with Brujan.
Yeah, I agree. I don't. Obviously, the playing time is more open now with that trade. But I don't know. I'm just whatever with Brujan. He's. I don't know. I would think if you need speed, I guess you take a shot. But to me, he's just bland, and you know, he'll give you a little bit of average, a little bit of speed. But even still, he stole 19 bases last year. I know it's just 276 plate appearances. Like, he's not the elite stolen base guy that we were hoping that he would be. So I don't know. I'm indifferent on it. It's fine. I wouldn't add him outside of deep leagues. I think I agree with you there.
All right, we got a few prospect promotions here. Three notable ones over the last few days. Kyle Manzardo, again, not finalized, but looking like it. Christian Scott and Brian Ramos. We'll start with the pitcher here, with Scott, who made his debut yesterday, and it was a very good debut. 6 2/3 innings, struck out 6, only allowed 1 run with 1 walk as well. He had a 3.20 ERA and 5 starts for AAA Syracuse before the promotion. 36 strikeouts, only 6 walks, 0.71 whip. Last year, between low A, high A, and double A, 87 2/3 innings, 107-12 K to walk ratio, which is phenomenal. 2.57 ERA, 0.86 whip. This is a guy that was already on the rise a little bit before I saw him last year live in double A. But after that, like, I just, and he didn't even have a great line in either of the two starts I saw him in, but you know, this stuff is really good. I think people are like, talk about him being a high floor arm, which he absolutely is given his plus or better command and control that he has. But his stuff is actually pretty good too. Mid 90s with sink. He's got a really good changeup, really good slider as well. In fact, he commands them all very well, makes the pitches even that much better. I've said that everything clicks with him, and we're talking like true like ceiling for him. Could be like an Aaron Nola type of player. I know that's very lofty. I get it. Trust me. But I firmly believe it. Like, I've been a firm believer in Scott ever since I saw him. I'm like, that cemented that in my mind. I'm like, God, this guy looks like a young Aaron Nola. So I'm all in on Christian Scott. I think he's going to be eventually one of the better pitchers in this game, or like at least a top 25 arm or so. So this is a guy that I would even buy high on right now.
I think so too. I'm curious to see how much fab he goes for. I think it's going to be quite a bit. Yeah. Obviously, by the time you're listening to this, you will know how much he goes for, but he's legit. I think that he's here to stay. I don't see this being the case where he gets sent down, honestly, unless it just gets really bad. But at the end of the day, I think that Christian Scott's going to be a really solid mid-rotation guy that maybe has some traits that could make him an SP2. We'll see. I don't want to be like overly high on him like this quick, but I do Scott a lot. I think we both had him like as a top six pitching prospect, yep, which is pretty high praise. So I'm in for sure. And I think it's very exciting that he's up now. Should be a nice boost to this Mets rotation for sure.
Don't worry, I'll be the overly high one. That's fine. I'm totally willing to lead that train for sure. I love Christian Scott. Like, he's one of my favorite pitching prospects I've ever seen live. So just a fun guy to watch pitch, and the way he operates and the way he can just locate everything where he wants to, hits the glove. I just love watching a guy like him pitch. The other two hitters here go to Kyle Manzardo next. Yeah, at this current point in time, Manzardo's been absolutely mashing, as he has all year, really proving that 2023 was not the real him. And the one we saw in 2022 this year, and then even in the AFL last fall, is the real Manzardo. In 29 games, he already has 19 extra base hits, 10 doubles, and 9 home runs. 303, 375, 642 slash line, 15 walks to 22 Ks. Back to that phenomenal approach. You know, plus hitter, plus power. Yeah, I think he's going to be – Cleveland really needs this guy in their lineup. And I think long-term, I don't think he's ever going to be like a top five first baseman, but I can see him getting up in like that 7, 8, 9 range at the first base position, you know, hitting 270-plus, 25, 30 home runs, something like that. And, yeah, I think he's going to be – you know, we never know with these prospects right off the bat. Look at Jackson Holliday, struck out 50% of the time. So we never know, but – Manzardo, being as advanced as he is with the approach he has, is a guy that could transition more seamlessly than others. We'll see. But overall, long-term, love the bat a lot and wish I had more of him in Dynasty, to be honest with you.
Yeah, same. He's legit. I think that now you look at what he's done this year, we have a long track record of him having very high contact rates, and that's continued into this year. Running like a 90% zone and I think 82 or 83% overall, not looking at it just off the top of my head. The EVs has improved each of the last 3 years, and he's well-deserved. The call-up is deserved at this point. Like, what else did he have to prove? Sadly, it took a Stephen Kwan injury, it looks like, for him to get the call, depending that does happen and Kwan hits the IL. But regardless, this man was deserving. We've been talking about him for a while. I think Manzardo comes up and hits the ground running. You know, we see other prospects come up and struggle. I talked about it with Tyler Black. I'll talk about it with Manzardo. When you have such a high hit tool, when you make contact at high rates and you don't chase a ton, it certainly increases your floor to hit upon your major league debut when the competition is much tougher than AAA.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, one last promotion here with Brian Ramos, who isn't quite on the level of Christian Scott or Manzardo, but does have some intrigue here. Though it was a pretty surprising promotion, if I'm being honest, Chris, because he was in AA Birmingham and not performing that well. 24 games, 182, 265, 307 slash, couple of home runs, couple of steals, K rate pushing 30%. So didn't really think he was on the cusp of a promotion. Though at the same time, I thought he would get assigned to AAA to start the year after having nearly half a season in AA last year with pretty solid results. So kind of been weird handling of Ramos by the White Sox. But Chris, what are your long-term thoughts here with Ramos? We saw him last year out in the AFL, had a lot of hard hit balls. What's your long-term outlook for him?
I think in the immediate future, I think there's going to be some struggles. Wouldn't shock me at all if it's a short-term thing, just given that where he was and the fact that, yeah, things hadn't been great off the bat this year. He's got big power. He put up some really big exit velocities last year, and the contact rates were actually pretty respectable. And I really liked what I saw out of Brian Ramos. But so far this year, it was like, whoa, what happened? So I was a bit caught off guard that he struggled as much as he did, really, in the AA debut. Not even debuts in AA last year. But I don't know. We'll see. I'm interested to see how he performs. If he plays regularly, is it just filling a spot for the short term or what? Long term, I think he's a pretty athletic for a bulky, strong guy, like good athlete. I think he'll be okay. He's going to hit you some power. He's going to maybe get on base at a decent clip. He's run decent OBPs for his career. So we'll see how that fare continues to play at higher levels. But yeah, I'm not interested right now in Brian Ramos, but I am long term. I think he has much more appeal, which does create an interesting point that if he does struggle, it creates a decent buy low in Dynasty. I think he's already a buy low, but if he struggles, then yeah, I'm certainly going to get back in on him at the depleted cost.
Yeah, because the cost wasn't even that high when he was hitting well. I mean, I think he was still undervalued at that point in time. And the fact that he's been struggling this year, I think has only dropped it even more. The fact that he's a very cheap, low-risk, high-reward type of investment right now. So, yeah, I think in deeper league, what's he ranked for me? Like, I think 140 to 150 or so. I think you're a bit higher on him than I am with your ranking. So, not a top 100 guy right now, but could be easily. He has the upside to be, for sure. All right, now let's close out the show with another edition of Three Up, Three Down. Going back to the hitting side after doing pitchers last week, our first up here is Lazaro Montez, 19 years old in high A Modesto, currently slashing 304, 409, 544, 5 home runs in 22 games. And I know RBIs don't matter, but 31 RBI in 22 games is pretty damn impressive. We have 15 walks to 16 strikeouts. He has had a few home runs over the last few days. He looks the part, obviously. He's big body, not in a bad way, like big in a good way. And contact skills have gone up this year. The approach has been solid. I mentioned that strikeout to walk rate. He has a walk rate of about 14% and the K rate right there as well, which is very impressive too. So yeah, I don't have him top 10 yet. People have been talking about him as being a top 10 guy. I'm not quite ready to go there, but I have him where do I have him overall? I have him 27 right now and in a pretty big glob. So I think he could be up into my top 20 by my next update and maybe top 10 later in the year. We had a lot of guys graduating, so top 10 is possible. But yeah, Lazaro Montes looks pretty damn impressive so far this year.
Yeah, I will throw the caution flag that the contact skills have been taking a step back, which is interesting because he's still hitting. You look at like the last week, it's three hits, no hits, two hits, three hits. And so surprisingly, like the contact rates have actually dropped a bit, but when you're still getting the results, it's like, all right, whatever. Like he's not striking out. He's got as many walks to strikeouts so far. I think he needs the challenge of being sent to high A at this point. I know he's young. He's 19 and a half, but you know, send him up to high A. Let's see what he's got. He's going to absolutely mash in Everett. That's such a hitter friendly park. He may hit 30 home runs in a month there, just with the power that he's got. Eyeballs are going to leave the yard. So I'm really interested to see what happens here with the contact, especially as he moves up. But you can't argue with the results. Strikeout rate, 14.5%. I don't know, man. He just looks the part. He's hitting for power. He has everything you want to see. I think if he can maintain an average contact rate, he's going to be fine. Certainly think he's moving up very quickly.
Now, did you mean that the contact rates have gone down lately, or are they down overall for the season? I thought they were off.
No, they were way up early, and it's been like a downward trend recently, which is weird. Just looking at the results, I don't really understand this. Is what it is. The results are still there, so yeah, looks legit. Yeah, that's true.
Sometimes the metrics don't match up. Just look at Vlad Jr. Sometimes the metrics just don't match up. Even like the poster child is like Max Kepler. Like this guy always has really good, for the most part, really good savant page, but the production is never really there. So that's baseball for you. But moving on to the first down here, we get Dylan Cruz, a guy that was obviously right there with Wyatt Langford in terms of 1-1 and 1-2 in FYPDs last year. He didn't really have a great start to his pro career last year, but small sample size. But this year, hasn't been terrible for Cruz so far in double A Harrisburg, but still, again, this lackluster across the board since he's gotten up to double A. 20 games last year in double A, 208, 318, 278, zero home runs. 15 games this year, 237, 308, 441, two home runs, two steals, which is solid, but 24 strikeouts in 66 play appearances, which is very un-Cruz. So overall, in double A, he's only hitting 221 in 35 games there. We've been preaching, especially you, Chris, for sure, to be patient with him. Obviously, he's a better hitter than this. Let's look at what he did at LSU. But is there maybe a little bit of concern kind of settling in now with Cruz? And is he still a top 10 prospect, do you think?
He's really tough. He's been nursing an injury pretty much all year, which I think certainly is a part here. Like, it affects everything in the swing and the contact, the ability to lift, but the strikeouts are very high. He's running a contact rate of 66%. And we're talking about one of the best contact hitters and well-rounded profiles in college baseball for three straight years. Like, this isn't a Drew Jones situation. It's we saw him playing in the highest level of college baseball and dominate for 3 years. So it is weird to sit here and be like, okay, like, what's going on? And I will say, since he's returned from injury, he's looked a little better. The last three games, he's played consistently. I think his timing's been off because he's played inconsistently. But the last three games, he's had two hits, including a double and a triple. And then yesterday, he added a triple as well. So three triples and a double in the last three games. So at least some signs of positivity, but four strikeouts over the last three games combined. I don't know, man. It's weird to see him not make contact because he was such a good contact hitter and he hit for power. And I wonder if just the ability to, the timing may be off a little bit with the injury. I don't know. I think he's fine now. Hopefully he's fine moving forward, but it's time to see some results because we can't just sit here and hang that on the 3 years of college results when he's not getting them in pro ball. It's a big transition. He's in double A, but still we need to see something.
Where do you have him right now in your prospect rankings?
He was 10 at the update last week. I want to see what happens in May. I think we need to see this month through before making any kind of drastic change. But I'll tell you, if his contact rate runs below 70% this month, then I'm probably going to dip him a pretty decent amount.
Yeah, he was 9 for me. As I still like him. I don't like him as much as the top tier. Like him more than that big glob I mentioned earlier that goes from really 12 to 30 or so. But he might be down into that glob pretty soon here because maybe I like him. I still like him more right now than Shaw, Jenkins, even Manzardo, etc. But is that going to change? I'm holding out hope that Cruz is going to start hitting like Cruz can and even close to what we saw at LSU. But yeah, it has not been a great start to his pro career, that's for sure. So he might drop down into that glob by next update. Maybe he's ranked like 20th or something next month. We shall see. The next up here, we're going back to the Seattle Mariners organization. Always a lot of fun prospects in Seattle. And Harry Ford's been red hot on a 12-game hitting streak entering play on Sunday. It's over that hitting streak, slashing .429, .579, .833 in 57 plate appearances with 5 doubles, 4 home runs, 5 steals, and 13 walks to only 9 strikeouts. You know, a bit of a slow start to the season for him, but really picked up the pace. Obviously, the skills are all there with Ford. We've never seen him put up like the gaudy stats, especially in the power department. That's always been the one area we've been hoping for more. But this is a guy that's had over a 400 OBP all four seasons. It was 400 in 2021 on the dot, 425 in 2022, 410 last year, and 425 so far this year. Every year he's been right around, you know, like a 18 to 20 homer pace with 30 or so steals. He's a good athlete, walks a lot, doesn't strike out that much at all. K rate last year was under 20%. Same this year, or I said a little over 20% this year, but guy that just does a lot of things with that power, really starts ticking up in games, and 4 home runs this year is a good start, 8 doubles as well. So that's, I like to see that. So if he can be a 20 homer guy, and maybe he's 20 plus steals and be one of those kind of fantasy unicorns at that catcher position. So I still have him as my number one ranked catching prospect. Basayo is over at first base full-time now. I like him a lot more than Ethan Salas. So I think that's not the consensus right now, but I would take him over Salas. And I think he's still undervalued. For me, he's a great buy right now.
I think so. I think that it's almost a bit of a fatigue thing with him. Like, I feel like we've talked about Harry Ford for so long. And then everybody's like, oh, he's not a catcher, blah, blah, blah. He consistently excels behind the plate. Like, this man is very good behind the plate. His athleticism allows it to play up a ton. And so I think that Ford is a catcher. I really do believe he can be a catcher long term. And worst case, maybe he plays across the field and he plays more. That's good for fantasy value if he's catching and playing in the field. He steals bases, which is rare. He hits for power and he gets on base. So I do think that Ford's continued good performance in Double A now, especially, is very encouraging. He just turned 21 years old and he's in Double A and hitting like this. I'm very pleased with the results and I'm very excited to see the progress that he continues to make. And I don't think it'll be shocking if we see him in Triple A by midseason if he continues to hit like this.
Yeah, no, I could absolutely see that as well. And yeah, it feels like he should be older than he is. Feels like he's been around for so damn long now. But yeah, still only 21 and still performing pretty well. I've always been a big Ford guy, and that's not changing anytime soon. Next guy, though, a guy that I think we were both very high on. We both had him ranked pretty highly when we did our projected top 25 prospects for next year. But been a pretty rough start to the season for one Roderick Arias with the New York Yankees. Got the bump up to low A Tampa this year, which I think was a fine bump. He performed very well last year in the complex level before getting hurt, which was really a bummer because he was really red hot when he got hurt. This year so far, he's had 2 home runs and 5 steals in 25 games, so that's all right. But 186 average, 339, should be 319 OBP, 330 slug. And the biggest number here, 38.8% strikeout rates. Chris, we've talked about other guys, you know, Drew Jones, Elijah Green, Vaquero, etc., that these young guys have the very high K rates. And granted, this is really the first time we've seen a high K rate of this nature from Arias, but how concerned are you right now seeing what we're seeing from him right now?
Yeah, he's tough. He's actually making more contact over the last 2 weeks, but yet I sit here and look at the game log and it's 3Ks, 2Ks, 3Ks, 2Ks, 2Ks. Like, he hits the ball hard. I'm not overly worried about that. Like, he does impact it at a high level. Last year, he ran a 9th percentile EV at MLB average as a young 18-year-old last year, and he's 19 now. He had missed a lot of time due to the injuries, broke his hand, I think, last year, needed surgery, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, the overall contact rate right now is actually below 60%, which is scary. I mentioned it's been up the last 2 weeks or so, but still, like, the other flaw is, despite him hitting the ball hard, 90 mile an hour average EV, but it doesn't matter because he's not lifting. He's pounding it on the ground. He has a 1.9% barrel rate because the ground ball rate is so high. And I think that's a little bit concerning for me when I look at this profile and saying, like, all right, we've talked ad nauseum about guys that hit the ball on the ground too much. Is this going to be a guy that just completely plagues and he's not able to get to the results because he hits the ball on the ground when he does make contact? So I think these are things worth noting, and it does give me a little bit of pause with Roderick Arias that he's just one struggling to make contact, and when he does, he's pounding it on the ground.
Yeah, there's still so much upside here, so I'm holding out hope, but this is very concerning, the low contact rates and the high K rate. I've dropped him a bit. I'm not going too drastic yet, but if this doesn't improve over the next month or so before our next prospect rankings updates, you know, end of May, early June or so, yeah, I think that drop off in my ranking is going to be much more drastic at that point. But hopefully he can turn it around because he's a very fun player to watch. The next up here, we got Robert Hassel, the third, former top prospect, a guy that I used to be very high on. I know I wasn't the only one there, but the last couple of years with him have been pretty rough. Last year, in 121 games, /221, 324, 321. K rate went way up last year. We're still walking a lot, but not doing a whole lot else at the plate. But this year, he's back in Double A Harrisburg and off to a much better start to the season. In 22 games, 100 plate appearances, 341, 434, 471. K rates at 20%, walk rate 12%, 6 extra base hits, 2 home runs, 8 steals, only been caught once, and really heating up over the last couple of weeks or so. I'm not going to say, is Hassel back? Because it's an odd question to ask, because back to what level, right? I don't think anyone's going to say he's back to the level we thought he was 2 years ago or whatever it was when his value was peak. But do you think there's a reason to believe in what we've seen from him this year, Chris? And would you be looking to buy right now in dynasty leagues?
I do think he's bouncing back, but I'm not going all in on him. Last year, he did something interesting. He completely sold out the contact skills for power, and he had a massive jump in EVs last year, which was notable. But at the end of the day, it didn't matter. He hit the ball on the ground a ton. And that's still the issue. He's not striking out as much this year, but he's still not making great contact. You know, right now, we're looking at a contact rate of, well, it's up 75%, which is pretty solid. That is improvement from last year. That was up a little bit from the last time I looked. I guess he's had a pretty good week. So that is notable. I will say with Hassel, he's got to lift the ball, 60% ground ball rate. That's really concerning. He's been in the 50%+ range his entire career. And I think it's another thing where it's not that fantasy friendly of a skill set. If he can't get to power, is he going to steal you bases? Maybe. He has stole 8 so far this year, which is encouraging, but I don't know how much he runs long-term. I think he can be a 20 steal guy, but if he gives you 8 to 10 homers, how valuable is that? I don't think he's sustainable 341 batting average sticks. So I think that he is a buy to an extent, but I think the expectations probably should be tempered with Robert Hassel.
Yeah, I moved him back up a bit here. Let's see, where did I move him to? I have him at close to 250 at this point. And previously, let's see, where was he previously? Yeah, so he went up about 80, 90 spots. He was in like the 330 range in my update as the season started. So I think that was warranted. But yeah, I'm still waiting to see him do this for longer. It's a good thing to see him turning around a little bit here, but you know, I'm tempering expectations until I see this for longer. But our final down for this episode, saving this one for last, this is a guy that both Chris and I have seen live. Chris saw him a lot last year. I've seen him several times this year, and that's Roman Anthony of the Boston Red Sox, who was just skyrocketing up rankings last year. You saw him enter some top 10s on various outlets. That's more for real life rankings, but even for fantasy focused rankings, and he was jumping up in the top 20s. I had him top 20, but I have dropped him down to, he's 30 right now in my last update here. The tail end of that glob I mentioned earlier that goes from 12 to 30 or so, because Chris and I, we text back and forth about Anthony every so often, and the swing decisions have just not been great. And the K rate's about 34% right now. And Chris, you mentioned this end of last year that pitchers got a read on him and started exploiting that. And that has continued this year. So now he needs to adjust back. Obviously the talent is very high. He's only 19. He'll be 20 here in about a week, but this is definitely a concern right now with Roman Anthony.
Yeah, he was one. He looked like infallible his first couple months in Greenville. He did everything right. It was so good. And then I just remember one game. It was like, man, breaking ball. Like they're throwing, righty's throwing breaking balls at his back foot. He's just whiffing and chasing. He had not done that at any point up to, that was like August, I think. And from that point on, he began to get more breaking balls. And the results were still really good. I guess you can't argue with what he did. He even bumped up to Portland to end the year last year, and he didn't strike out all that much. But the under-the-hood stuff is a bit concerning right now. Contact rate currently is below 70%. And we're talking about somebody that was like 80% last year. So it's a pretty sizable drop in contact rate. So I'm looking at that, and I'm a little bit concerned from that standpoint. He did add a lot of bat speed this offseason. Like I saw him in spring training. I'm like, all right, man, like this dude didn't need to add more bat speed, and he did, but it doesn't matter right now. He's not making contact. He's not getting the power. I haven't dropped him yet, but I do think that May will be very telling. We need to get some warmer weather up your way in Maine and see what he does. And from there, we'll assess, but I think that right now you look at it and you're saying, like, this is a little bit concerning to see him running a strikeout plus walk rate near 50%. Like, that's hovering like a three true outcome kind of player, boomer bust type. Small sample, 101 plate appearances. But again, that's like half of what we saw in Greenville last year when he was so good. So I think that he needs to prove something to us over the next month or so before, like, I don't want to panic yet, but it's concerning.
Yeah, and there's been a lot wrong with his plate appearances right now. And when I say terrible swing decisions, that doesn't always mean just swinging too much at stuff outside the zone. He's been not swinging at pitches he probably should have been swinging at. Yeah, I've seen so many. Right. The walk rate's still very high. I would love to see what his pitches per plate appearance is right now. That's probably very high as well. In fact, he's not swinging at all these kind of meatballs, fastballs that he should be trying to be attack early in the count, getting himself in too many two-strike counts, and then pitchers just going to the junk, going outside the zone, and he's just swinging and missing a ton. So that's really concerning right now. And can that be improved upon? Absolutely. He's still very young with a lot of upside. And he still has 2 home runs and 4 steals so far this year. As I mentioned, the walk rate's a little under 16%. But I want to see him be a bit more aggressive so he can try to attack those fastballs early before they can get to the breaking balls. But that's still an area he's got to improve upon. You know, that's another issue that he has to work on too. So some things to work on here, but had to drop him down my rankings for now. But hopefully this is just a minor speed bump for him and he can get going here, as you mentioned, as the weather heats up, which is taking its sweet-ass time to do. It's been in the 50s. It's been pretty stagnant in like the low 50s right now. We're actually going to get like 60s the next 2 days, but nice. Then back down into the low 50s. So hopefully soon we can get some warm weather here and Anthony maybe can heat up as the weather does. But we shall see. That is going to wrap us up, though. Thanks to everyone for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back with you again later on this week. But until then, everyone take care.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.